seat yourselves so we can start the second half of our morning. So, before we start with the program at the second part of the morning, what I usually do with students is I start going, pss, 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 pss. Okay, we have three people need to check at the front desk either to pick up a receipt or complete some paperwork. Kimberly Kaiser, Corey Mueller, and Bill Simpkins. So when you get a chance at lunch, go to the front desk. So now that we've considered the sediment that we call till, I want to introduce our next speaker, Bob Tipping. Bob is a senior scientist at the Minnesota Geological Survey and an adjunct faculty member in the Department of Earth Sciences and Water Resources Science Program at the University of Minnesota. Bob has an interest in aquifer characterization and groundwater surface water interaction. And this has really placed him at the nexus of a variety of regional initiatives integrating groundwater and till. Bob received a BA from Carleton College and a master's and PhD from the University of Minnesota. Bob will be sharing his perspective on tills and groundwater.
First off, before I start, I want to make an announcement. So the last speaker today, Keith Schilling from Iowa Survey, we were just talking over the break, and he's looking for a groundwater modeler, all right? So if you are a student and or just recently minted or you're thinking about changing positions, he's going to make an announcement about that, but he's the last speaker of the day. And granted everybody's best intentions, this room will not be as full at that time as it is right now. So Keith is sitting right down here in the yellow, all right? So feel free to sit down with him at lunch, feeling how bold, whatever you feel, is to introduce yourself. But it sounds like a great opportunity. They're looking, so just so you know. All right, so what I want to do is I want to shift gears a little bit from this morning, and thank you for the great talks this morning as far as kind of setting the stage of where these glacial tills are and in particular how they're mapped. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. That's in my title. But I also want to start talking about sort of the applications of these tools, in this case looking at vertical recharge. And I'm going to focus pretty much on land surface down to the bedrock surface. That's really what kind of this is all going to be about. But I wanted to start with this document. All right, so this is the DNR sensitivity document. There was actually a work group that worked on this. And the people that did this is 1991, and the people who were involved in this, some of these people are in the room. I saw Jan. There's Jan. Anybody else? Bruce Olson here? But the basic goal of this was to design a framework. How are we going to try to assess sensitivity of aquifers? This is a term that gets used a lot. Some specifics I'll get into in for a moment, but this was the idea was to look at vertical infiltration through these units, in this case what we're talking about today, glacial tills, and come up with a way to score it to assess how fast water would be able to move down through those units. So Jan, since you're the only person in this room that I can see who is of this group, what does the L stand for in L score? So L, it's not on there, but L score is the score that's given. So people from the health department are familiar with this, right? Yes, health department, L score. So why L? Okay. Well, he can't define himself, but it took me a while to actually find where L score came from, but it's this document. So it's described in there, and essentially what it is, before I go any further, I do want to mention this. So the funding for this project is back in 1991 was Legislative Commission on Minnesota Resources. So back then it was the LCMR, but it was still the same funds, the Environmental Trust Fund. It is now the LCCMR. But I wanted to acknowledge them in particular because they are not only supported this particular project, but much of the mapping that we've done at MGS. So that's important. As we all recognize that this has been a source of funding for a lot of the mapping efforts that have been done here in Minnesota, and we'd like to see that continue. I should also mention I don't have icons for them, but I'm going to be showing a lot of the work that was supported by the PCA. In addition to cities of Rochester, Rochester Public Utilities, all these people have contributed to the type of methods that I'm going to be showing here as part of this project. And I should also mention Metropolitan Council in particular, because we'll show some examples from the metropolitan area where we were looking at recharge, this very specific topic of how fast does water move from the land surface down to the bedrock surface. Okay, so this document, back to the 1991 document, was essentially to look at vertical recharge, and it doesn't take into account things like pumping or water levels or seasonal changes. It was strictly just to look at geologic material in the vertical sense and count up the thickness of geologic layers as you go down. This is where this L-score term comes from. It kind of came in three parts. Part one was near-surface assessments. So this is the equivalent of your soils maps. It had a level two, which goes down to through the vadose zone to the water table, and then a level three. The context of what I'm going to be talking about is really the level three, but I wanted to walk you through these first three first. So this level one assessment, again, is near-surface sensitivity. And again, this is strictly geologic materials. Is it coarse material? Is it fine-grained material? We've talked this morning about textures. This is really all texture-based, depending on the texture equivalent of what hydraulic conductivity would be. Okay, so there's the level two. This is going down to the water table, and then level three is a way to assess the overall thickness of confining units up above a particular unit. So these were the guidelines that were done, and again, this was all under the premise that this is travel time. That was the term that was used. Although there isn't a specific measurement of that travel time, there's also implicitly no, although it's expressed that there was some sense of travel time, there's nothing explicit in there about hydraulic head. So nothing about the vertical gradient that would drive this through these sediments. So we want to talk about that a little bit too. But the idea is, again, very high, high, moderate to low. These were the way that you would measure how fast water is getting vertically down through these materials. And the L-score calculation, so here's Bruce Olson's L-score, is basically divide your total thickness, whatever you get, 50 feet, for example, divided by 10 would be an L-score of 5, and that would be considered to be very low sensitivity. All right, so now think back about what we've been talking about with Carrie's presentation and the nature of these tills. We know that there are lots of things going on. Even if we took all the sediment that was defined in engineering borings as being a clay loam, for example, if we looked at the range of hydraulic conductivities from what would be done in a lab to what was done in a soil boring or a slug test in one of those holes in engineering boring, we're going to get orders of magnitude difference in hydraulic conductivities. That being said, this is where the direction we're going is to be able to look at these materials, try to predict a hydraulic conductivity by their textures, and then add them up and somehow apply that to get a travel time. So this was one of the first applications that this is the Olmsted County Atlas, and you don't need to see all the detail in here except to recognize that there's VH, H, LM, low and medium, all these gradations that have to do with what would be the effective time of travel from the land surface down to the bedrock surface in Olmsted County. The actual map looks like this. It's mostly hot colors because it's shallow to bedrock in much of Olmsted County, with the exception of this patch off to the west, southwest of the city of Rochester. And this, again, is an area of thick till. This ended up being the site of the Kalmar landfill that was based largely on this map. So, again, this is a way to look at what's the vulnerability of that bedrock aquifer system, how much material does it have to travel through in the unconsolidated to get down to bedrock. In this case, the sensitivity map points to a good location for a land use. Okay, so I want to step you through just quickly some of the background of how we got to where we are right now. This is the northern half of Washington County, and Gary Meyer, who is with the MGS but not in the room today, did this map. Gary was one of the first people, really the pioneers for us at the survey, of kind of thinking about the quaternary in three dimensions. And this map, here's a close-up of it, is a 2D representation of what you would expect to go through in the land surface. So these strange codes, 1S, 2, 3, S, 4, whatever. There's four tills that he mapped in Washington County. He mapped the contour, the tops and bottoms of those till units, and that's what this represents. So if we took one example up here, that's till 1, so there are four tills, followed by a sand, then 2 over 3 over 4, and then a sand below that. So obviously there's a 2D problem here of trying to represent. But the idea was, it was sound. It was like, if I'm standing on this piece of land, what's down below me in terms of permeability to get down to the bedrock surface? So this is what those units look like. And it was our first attempt at cross-sections. So to close up here, here's one of those close-ups. So again, Gary mapped the tops and bottoms of each of these tills. We created rasters of those tills and then assigned hydraulic conductivities. And here's where some of these ranges come in. So at the time, these are the values that we're seeing, 3, 4, 5 orders of magnitude for the terms that we define as having a specific texture. And it's still that way. We have, I'm not going to show you the slides with it, but we have accumulated a whole bunch of data. We, being Tony Runkle, is our biggest data dumpster diver at the PCA, collected just tons and tons of data based on texture of all scales from lab permeability to soil borings. And this, again, gets to the engineering boring question that came up earlier. There's a wealth of information in these data, and a lot of it's being collected right now by the PCA in a way that's not in the paper files. But just to say, again, we have a lot of good information, but even when we get those good tests, we still end up with 3 to 4 orders of magnitude, and that's the way it is. That's what we would expect. But when you're putting that into a groundwater model, those are the type of hurdles that you have to get around. So that's why we put these ranges on here for these different till units. And I haven't specified what the textures of the till 1, 2, 3, and 4 are, but that was implicit in trying to assign those hydraulic conductivities. All right. Now, here's Gary again. This is for a project that was done from the Metropolitan Council to look at the Northwest area recharge. Starts with bedrock topography, and this is the building of the rasters that we're talking about. So if we start at bedrock topography, and remember our eventual goal at the land surface here is an Oka sand plain. We've got till, 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 sand, till, sand. There's our Cromwell till, or at least the lower one. Sand, till, that's glacial Lake Lind. Okay, so that's a lake sediment. Sand, till. Here's our sand plain, and there's our terrace deposits. So if we think about Anoka sand plain, for example, as being on a sensitivity map, well, we're in the sand plain. All the sequences of those units, and you get down to bedrock, are fairly complex. And so we're going to score that in some particular way, and that's totally excluding the fact that up in here, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, maybe the hydraulic head in the bedrock aquifers down below it is almost coincident with the water table. So in other words, in the absence of pumping, what's going to drive water down through those sediments? So I want to make the point here, and I'll make it again later, that hydraulic head, even though it changes, is something that we can start using now, given the data we have, to start looking at vertical recharge in these types of settings. All right. So moving forward a little bit, now we're into 2016. This is the DNR's application of this very process. So we provide rasters, and what they're looking at is recharge down through that unit. So Jim Berg had this method, which I think is really good in the sense that it's talking about now movement of water. And the idea is that if you have a minimum thickness in here of some distance, that you can actually move water from one aquifer down to the next. And that's what these codes were to refer to. So again, it's vertical. It's vertical in the sense that that's all we're going to deal with. We're not doing numeric modeling. We're simply looking at how fast is water going to get down. And so what Jim would define was a recharge surface, which you start here at the bottom of your surficial sediments, or at the top of your maybe a surficial sand, and it gets bumped down everywhere it can, implying that this buried aquifer here, because it has thinner units above it, are going to be more vulnerable to vertical recharge. And the same with this one here. Okay? So there's that setting, here's this setting, and this is the resulting map. So in the background here in the shades, you can see the bedrock units that are down below here, the bedrock map, and the vulnerability down to that bedrock surface represented by those different cascading down recharge surfaces is what's shown here. So again, it's showing little windows down to that lower aquifer based on the permeability of what's on top of it. Okay, so now we're bumped up to 2018, I think, Clay County, I'm not sure, but DNR went back and actually revisited this method, and what you'll notice right in here is back to our L score. So the idea is that we can still come back to this data and look at it in a way that is right back to 1991 in terms of that document, of total accumulated thickness, 5 feet here, 7 feet here, that buried sand is going to be get a designation of high. This is very high in terms of vulnerability. And likewise, over here, we've got the actual footage calculated in into results in a low sensitivity on these units. What the DNR does, in addition to doing this physical assessment, is they're also looking at the water chemistry itself. They're indicators of how that water actually is getting down. So here's our geologic units. Here's those same units represented by, say, tritium content and where we expect to be recent waters. And what's nice about this method, again, is the DNR is starting to put in interpretations in terms of water getting down into that unit. So the first one here, water moves through the surface sediment through thin layers to get down into that first aquifer. And we've got groundwater moving from an overlying superficial aquifer into a buried aquifer. Groundwater moves from an overlying buried aquifer to an underlying buried aquifer. And you can see what's happening here. So they're interpreting these colors. The red colors are essentially detectable tritium above a threshold value. The green colors would be a mixed signal of older and younger water. And the blues down below would be no detectable tritium. So this is a way of looking at this data now, not only vertically, but also horizontally. I mean, to explain this low value in here, the interpretation based on it had maybe didn't have to, but maybe it moved laterally from that aquifer into the one that's marked very low. Additionally, there's some more lateral movement. Groundwater discharges to a surface water body. So what are we doing? In this situation, we're taking this data, the physical container we have from the survey data, we're applying water chemistry, we're inferring possible flow paths. This is all good. It's not a groundwater model, but we're setting up to be able to evaluate conceptual groundwater models with this type of data. Oh, and finally down here, so unknown. We don't know how old that water is. Well, maybe we do. Maybe C14 was done in that water, and it's thousands of years old in that aquifer. We really don't know its history and how it got to there. We know that at least under these conditions, and I want to stress that, under these pumping conditions, maybe that one isn't being used, but no recent water is recharging that one. All right. I put up this slide just, again, to show this association between textures and transmissivity values, or hydraulic conductivity. So this is actually for the near-surface environments, where DNR is modeling the sensitivity, again, geologic sensitivity of materials down to a hypothetical water table of 10 feet. But the point being is that each one of these different textures, and that's what we've been talking about this morning, are going to be equated into some measure of how permeable that material is, or in the case of this transmission rates, how fast would it take water to get through. So here's just a brute calculation of adding up those textures and coming up with what you'd expect the travel time to be and seeing how well it maybe compares with chemistry or some other measure. Okay, there's a lot on this slide. It's a little too detailed, but it has another component that I want to include. So two things, hydraulic head and chemistry. This is a cross-section that was done for the project for the Metropolitan Council. The bedrock units are shown in the grays here, and they go through the ones that we're familiar with. But what I want you to pay attention to on this slide is these age dates down here within the Mount Simon. So that's carbon-14 dating. So that's this lower stack down in here where we know that water is old, at least, again, under current pumping conditions, that's the case. And then they've got these funny colors in here, like this little red wedge in here. And you can't really see it, but there's a little green wedge in there, and they'll become clearer as we go on to the next slide. But what's going on here, these are chemical types. These are actually chemical facies of what the water's like. And to interpret that all, besides having this nice quaternary stratigraphy up here, is we've got this additional feature of hydraulic head. So this is the vertical hydraulic head gradient over the same cross-section, and what I'm showing in there is here's zero, this is 50 feet. So this is the difference between the water table and the bedrock potentiometric surface over this portion. So what are we looking at? We're looking at an area in the central metropolitan area where heavy pumping in the Prairie du Chien and the Jordan is creating a vertical hydraulic gradient. So if we're going to interpret how fast water is going to move through there, we want to be able to include something like that. And if we take the geology away, now we have these water types. So this is actually just elevated strontium compared to calcium and magnesium in the waters. These are our recent waters right in here. This is where everywhere the data that we collect, so it's similar to what the DNR shows on their cross-section, has been mapped out as recent waters. So again, there's the physical setting. That's what the chemistry looks like. Whoops. And that's what the hydraulic head looks like. So there's additional components that we can include now with this data that we have in these data sets allow us to start superimposing other pieces to try and interpret vertical recharge. All right. So very quickly, how would this hydraulic gradient calculation work? Well, again, this is the metropolitan area. We've got a water table surface. We've got a potentiometric surface, in this case, for the Prairie du Chien Jordan. We know that the change in head is going to occur over some distance or length. And if we do all that, we can calculate our hydraulic gradient. So in other words, where all these little X's in here, these are the geologic materials, maybe based on texture. We can actually calculate a vertical travel time from the water table down to the bedrock over some distance based on that hydraulic gradient. Again, we have the data to do that. We didn't really have the data to do that in full map scale view back in 1991. Okay, so I just want to walk through, again, the scenario in terms of subsurface mapping. We know textures up at the land surface, so this would basically be your assessment level number one in those 1991 guidelines. This would be the surficial map. This is where we have the best information, the most detail about what's going on right at the land surface. And I'm just representing that with these blue stars in here. So we start to build this subsurface model, and we want to include that data. Also, we include in this data would be the soil surveys. It's a very well-mapped set of textures that tells something about what's going on at the land surface. What we've done at the MGS is to start creating these rasters. I show you examples of those here, where these layers are actually produced as digital rasters, where we can start looking at the cumulative changes as we go through these units of what these textures are and what their thicknesses are. In the absence of those, in the places where we don't have any mapping done, then we can use some interpolation methods. So being able to look at the distribution of these materials, maybe these are sand bodies shown in here by these X's, and then we're going to always have these unassigned points. And people that have worked on this data, so Met Council is working on this right now with HDR, where they're trying to figure out what do we do with data where we don't really know what it is, and what are you going to assign for hydraulic conductivity, all right? So those pieces are out there, and the data is available to do that, and ultimately, we just come back to the well data. And again, this is back to the L-score idea. For any given well, we can kind of assess what its vulnerability is. But it all comes back to well data. That's essentially what we're using to do all these data sets, is the county well index. So this question about going back into the data and assigning a unit based on its interpretation, this is what Rich was asking about. Ideally, we would be able to go over here if this was a well and for each of these points in that log assign wherever it falls. That works conceptually well, and I think it will work in many cases, but in terms of the complexity of that geologic section, it's going to be difficult to take out that clay layer that's in that log that's maybe 15 feet and tell whether or not that exact unit corresponds to, because in the process of mapping it, the geologist by necessity has to generalize. We didn't show you any of the cross-sections that was actually built for places like Anoka County and those dense data, but there's places where you're just going to have to accept some logs and ignore some others. So that's just the nature of it. I just wanted to make that specific comment with regard to CWI, because I agree with you. Ideally, what we would have in CWI, in that interpretive stratigraphy column, would be the names of those tills, because that would tell us immediately something about texture right there in the database. So that is the goal, and as Barb said, that's something that we're working on, but we're not there yet. So these are the three pieces: well data, an interpolated model, and subsurface mapping. And what we're working on currently at the MGS is to integrate these. How can we help fill in the gaps where we don't have the data already mapped? And this would apply to areas like groundwater management areas, some of the areas where watershed boundaries, where we don't have these boundaries. We're not dealing with political boundaries anymore. We're trying to connect where some of these atlas maps are at. So again, I'm including this slide just to give an idea where we're at with that. But ultimately, this is kind of the picture that we'd come up with. So this is metropolitan area, Twin Cities, bedrock surface you can see down below. This is Chain of Lakes Valley in here. I don't know how well the colors look on your screen, but essentially that Chain of Lakes Valley is filled with sand and gravel, shown by the redder colors. The darker colors in here, some of them, again, they don't show up very well, but those would be our other lithologies. So if we actually put the unit on here, we're going loam to clay loam, loam to sandy loam, you can go all through those, and then where they're deeper, we're actually specifying that because, again, we interpret that till material to have lower permeability under deep conditions, less fractures in it, more compression. So this is how we're trying to break out that quaternary section now into something that we can use hydrologically. So again, this is the idea, is that we would be able to represent the surface in here in a node-by-node basis of what that lithology is. And if you think about, at least the way I think about the groundwater model, this is a way to visualize what it is that we're actually representing. So if we put chemistry on here, we put pumping levels on here, it's a way to actually get a physical picture, I guess more the visible versus the invisible, of what's going on in an area, either due to pumping or something else. Okay, so in conclusion, methods to map vertical infiltration are consistent with the 91 guidelines. We really have always stuck to that. That's just going to be a vertical movement of water through these sediments. How well we've been able to map those has improved those vertical assessments because of the subsurface change in mapping. So moving into rasters, moving into interpolation is a way to build that stack. Some additional methods to consider adding would be vertical hydraulic gradient and mapping these chemical types of faces in three dimensions. So in the cross sections that DNR does right now, we see what those units are. We would like to see those units mapped actually in three dimensions too, so that basically you could slice that the same way you do with the geologic maps. And that's it.
Thank you very much, Bob. I'd like to open up for questions. Anyone who has questions for Bob? Over here.
Thank you. Bob, talk to us a little about the chemistry profile using chlorides and what you're learning about that in terms of age dates and the importance of chlorides.
That red polygon in there is a combination of anything anthropogenic. In the Twin Cities, the data is really clear that above 2 parts per million chloride is also detectable tritium. And there's enough data to support that because the health department has taken so many tritium samples that we could do that correlation really well. So in this case, a lot of that is chloride data. So here's a nice cheap analog to be able to look at recent waters that data a lot of people have. This is certainly the case in Olmsted County and Dakota County, where these counties have collected quite a bit of data to be able to do this sort of mapping.
Bob, can you talk about the challenge integrating this data across political boundaries at the county level a little bit?
Right. So there's a couple things. And just so you're aware of what's been MGS's response to this is largely what Barb was presenting today, is to start with a framework that we can all agree on in terms of what we're calling what. So that was the first step, building out these cross-sections. Oh, and then the other issue then, again, is because these atlases have been done over the span of the last 30 years, the quaternary stratigraphy doesn't go back that long, but we still have the case of geologists who are working with different amounts of data when they did it, so they don't necessarily have the same data set that a newer county would have next to it. And so, yeah, you end up with these border faults in the data. So, and that's just the way it is. So the idea is, what can we do to help bring those together? And the first step, of course, is to call things what they are, the same name, so that these units line up relatively by age, as they should, in the quaternary section rather than doing this. So, but it is a problem. And again, for all the applications for groundwater modeling are typically done, again, on either watershed scale or groundwater boundary scale, not political boundaries. So trying to put these pieces together are the challenges that we have right now. But again, the first step for us was to get these tills named the same, now starting to work about how we might integrate those across the boundaries.
Hey, Bob. Paul Putz here. Not so much a comment, or not so much a question as a comment. It's a good crowd to know. We've seen presentations this morning about the Atlas program. And for the last several years, the Atlas program funding continues to be really in jeopardy at the Capitol. I was just talking to Barb. I work in the Atlas program at DNR. I understand there was changes this week to MGS's Atlas funding, and DNR's Atlas funding in jeopardy as well. So there's a few weeks to go in the session, but if things don't change, some of this continuing work won't happen, just for you guys to know, because I don't know who else cares in some ways. So just be aware of that, and if you see any place to insert your ideas about funding for these kind of programs, it would be good to do that.
Yeah, thanks. Absolutely. Especially if you're trying to combine these data sets, this is the direction we want to go. Well, we want to be able to have a way to fund that too. And LCCMR has been very supportive all through the history of our mapping. Yep.